Hey, fangirls and boys, welcome back to Fangirl Confessional. This is episode number 10, and the band is finally back together.
Woo! After weeks.
Oh my gosh, it's been an age.
Many ages, many moons have fallen.
And, many yes, and what have you been telling about my absence? What is the tall tale you've been telling?
So, like, I think I said, we were talking about what you were into. I think dinosaurs came up as well.
Yes.
I said you were kidnapped by a hut.
Ooh, all right, all right.
I forget what else. I feel like we came up with a couple scenarios.
Yeah, I don't remember everything that we made up.
I know there was dinosaurs involved because you're really into Jurassic World or something. Jurassic World 2.
I do enjoy it. I don't know that I would say I'm into it, but yes, I do enjoy it. I did not, however, go start my own dinosaur theme park, so rest easy. I'm not wearing a metal bikini on Tatooine, so also don't worry about me, everybody. I have been doing a lot of traveling and downsizing at my job, which has taken a lot of adjustment, both mentally and logistically with time, but it's a great move for me. I'm really excited about it. I'm doing a lot of rebranding on my blog, soon to be a brand new name all across the board for my blog and my Twitter, my Instagram, so something to keep an eye out for. Mm-hmm. So like a lot of exciting things, but it's been a rough year, and so that adjustment has taken a long time and come to like a certain head, which is great. But I was in New York, I was in Indiana, I actually go back to New York next week. I'm everywhere. So that's where I have been, the real life story of Lizzie. No metal bikinis, no dinosaurs.
Gotcha. Honestly, follow her Instagram. It's so much fun. Always makes me smile. So
find it now before she changes it.
Yeah. Find it now. I'll make sure that you all know where I am.
We'll wait.
Yes, I've recently started watching How to Get Away with Murder, so it may be a lot of that to start off because I've never seen it before. So
yeah.
I'm falling down the rabbit hole.
No, it's pretty good. I haven't finished
in a good
it,
way.
Though.
Yeah. So that's what I've been up to. And I'm back. I'm glad to be back. I miss you guys. I miss talking and nerding out with you guys. And
guess who's back?
I'm excited.
Back again.
I'm excited to dive back in. The gang!
Yeah, the gang's all here.
Yay!
The Sanderson sisters.
Exactly. Especially as we go into the Halloween season.
Oh, Halloween! It's not even September, yay. And my students are asking, Miss Andrea, what are you going to be for Halloween? I haven't even thought that far.
Well, because it's almost Halloween season.
It's insane. The grocery stores are already selling candy. I don't think so.
I mean, Disney's already having its Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween party.
Oh.
And it's, like, for me, summer is not even close to being over. I refuse to even consider Halloween season till, like, October.
No,
I love summer. I know, we're opposite ends of the spectrum on that one. Yeah. You know, I love my summer bikini, my bathing suit, my beach, my sunshine.
The thing is that if I was in Florida and I had a beach and I could wear my bikini, then I would, but I cannot. I am in
Canada.
That's
true, but you always have somewhere to crash if you want to come down here.
Oh, I'm taking you up on that offer.
I'm
you
so
should.
Over summer.
You should come on down.
We're about to go into another heat wave. I'm over summer.
I only like heat waves. I have decided what I want to be for Christmas, but I haven't decided what I want to be for Halloween yet.
Interesting. And Christmas is even farther away than Halloween.
I know, but our family does a bigger thing for Christmas than we do for Halloween. We do our cosplay Christmas. And this year's theme, da-da-da-da, is Disney. Hello. Oh, so it's perfect.
Oh, that's easy.
That's perfect.
Yeah, I'm going to be Rapunzel.
We actually should have an episode that talks about our, like, Christmas
traditions
and what we watch and stuff like that. I'm so excited. That's, now
we can have a big
god, you guys were just giving me heck for being excited about Halloween, and now you're talking about Christmas, which again is further away than Halloween.
Got too excited, Shannon.
I love these upcoming months. These are my favorite months, not just because it's my birthday months coming up, but
mine too.
You say birthday months?
Well, mine is December.
Yes,
so
I have birthdays multiple months, Shannon.
Yeah.
When's your birthday, Liz?
Mine's in December, the day after Christmas.
Oh, so, see, that's perfectly
a little further down the pipe.
For you then.
But see, this is what happens. This is why I don't like discussing Halloween before September or like late September, early October, because this is what always happens. Everybody immediately is like Thanksgiving, Christmas, like Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas. It's like, yes. It's like the Leaning Tower of Pisa falling over.
It is.
It's like a Jenga tower. As soon as you pull on one, the rest of them come down. So I'm like, I want to, at least through Labor Day, we still have one more week. Like, this week should be preserved for summer and enjoy our summers and our barbecues and our sunshine and our flip-flops. And then we can start talking about Halloween costumes.
So that even though I already know what I'm going to be for Christmas. We can talk about our Halloween.
No, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, there we go.
All right, let's get on the...
Go ahead.
All right, so the very first thing that we're going to touch upon is our safe space. Everything that we say, everything that comes out of our mouths is our opinions. You don't have to agree, but we can agree to disagree in a lot of things. And if you have something to say, we are always welcoming you to voice your own opinions. We do want everybody to feel like they do have a voice, and we do care about what you have to say. And that's about it. We love you guys, and we do want to hear your thoughts.
As long as it's helpful, not harmful.
And healthy.
Yes, like, you know, my girl Kelly Marie finally came storming back onto the scene.
Yes.
After everything, you know, all the hateful stuff that happened and how, you know, telling us her birth first name.
And, oh, that was so powerful. Yeah. Like, it made me tear up. It was just so beautiful.
Just so y'all know, this is a Kelly Marie Tran positive, you know, space. We love Kelly Marie Tran. And we're going to defend her. That's just how it is.
Girl power.
It's just the facts. Okay, so we had a listener question, correct?
Yes. So while Andrew was away, obviously we talked about reboots. So David asked us a question about reboots, and I figure since we're all gathered here today, including Andrew, we can discuss it. So we didn't, like, discuss what it is about reboots. We just talked about reboots specifically. So David asked, what is it about a movie that makes it rebootable? Is Batman and Superman rebootable because it's harder to complain back then and now we're used to it? Is it because of the content? What makes them want to reboot a TV show or movie instead of going with a new concept? There has to be other reasons other than money. For me, sorry, I kind of went right into it. For me, sometimes there is. Sometimes. However, those are like very few and far between kind of things. Like when we talked about Mad Max.
Wait, you're saying sometimes there are reasons other than money.
Sometimes there are things you can do that prove that there's something in it other than money. But okay. Not always. It's very rare. Because like we talked about Mad Max. And Mad Max was a feminist action movie. Right, that was completely changed because it wasn't about Max. It was about the women in Mad Max. That made it different. Just like, you know, Ghostbusters was about women, which made it different. There are some times when a reboot is rebooted because they find a better way to tell it, or there's a way that they can tell it that makes it relevant for our day and age. However, most reboots are nearly exactly the same. They're nearly unchanged. They have nearly the same beats, nearly the same content. So
I don't know if I would go with most, but I would say a lot, but maybe not most.
Like enough that it feels that way.
I'd have to look at the whole list.
Because like there are some that obviously there are some that I like that are different from the original. But at the same time, if it's not changed enough, why you rebooted it for money?
Well, like, to his point about Superman and Batman, those are all incredibly different. And they don't hit any of the same notes as far as from actor to actor. So if you're looking at, or even a James Bond, where you're sort of rebooting the character, which is his, is built to do that. But I mean, it could be in the realm of because of a character recast, and sometimes you hit on a similar story. But If he's talking about things like Batman and Superman, which I think are completely different because comic book characters, because they're tied to the roots of comic books and are able to be done so on that medium, yeah. we allow for it to happen on screen because of that, right? Mm-hmm. So I agree with you, Shan. I think that a lot of time it's money. I think the most of the time it's money. I think it's playing on nostalgia. I think it's, oh, that worked in the 50s. Let's try it again now. Yes. I think sometimes someone who loved a project growing up and gets to a certain place in their career where they have some pull maybe looks back in the canon and pulls something out that they loved as a kid. I wonder if maybe that happened with Mad Max. Mm-hmm. And that's something I love to see. I think that happened with JJ with Star Trek. I think he loved Star Trek and he said, how can I put my take on this whole world that I love and grew up watching? And similarly with Star Wars, except for he didn't reboot that, obviously, as right. we know. But he got to make his mark there. And so I love to see when a director comes in and reboots or puts his touch on his or her touch on something that they loved as a child and they care about it. I don't like when someone comes in and rips it apart and says, oh, like Gem, by the way, the Gem reboot will always go down in history as
here we go again.
The thing that infuriates me. And it was ripped out of theaters, I think, on the third or fourth week because it was literally just losing money.
Yeah. I think, well, that brings in something different. It's whether it's a director's idea to reboot something or a studio's idea to reboot something. Those and I think that's something we different mindsets.
Yeah, you're right. And I don't think that there's a way for us to really get into those rooms and know that. I think exactly. what he's sort of asking is like, what is the mentality behind a reboot? And that's, I think that that's different across the board. I think what it feels like is a money play most of the time. I wonder if we're ever going to really know the reasons behind a studio or a director pulling the cord on those kinds of things, because those are things we never hear about unless unless it becomes such an impediment to production that it has to come out.
Yeah, that it gets reported on.
Right. I feel like we don't really get to be behind the doors and on those reasons. And what I was saying is I think the majority of the times make it feel like money because we're all like, why are you rebooting that? We liked the original one. Mm-hmm.
And I think that you touch up on a good note. If there was a lot of more transparency as to why they do these changes and why they do the reboots, then it would be kind of more interesting to understand the purpose of it. I look at, for example, and we're going to be talking about Disney tonight, looking at The Jungle Book, looking at 101 Dalmatians, those movies that were rebooted, they go into from cartoon to live action. There is a new story to be told. I mean, it has the same concepts, the same characters and stuff like that. CGI was a huge thing, especially in The Jungle Book. And I feel like as a director or somebody that's writing this, it's that inspiration. Times have changed. Technology has changed and it's just a new adaptation to make things more fresh and relatable, and hoping in the end to bring back that amazement that the movie or the show was when it first came out. So those are things to keep in mind, but it would be really interesting to see the motivations for these reboots. For Batman and Superman, Lizzie, you touched upon it. I feel like comic books provide different gateways to experience characters that it's so okay to tell Batman's story a million ways or Superman's story a million ways, Spider-Man's story a million ways. The problem lies that after a while, you get tired of these reboots. You get tired of seeing the characters. I was so hesitant and so resistant to watching Spider-Man Homecoming because I was so overly saturated with Spider-Man that I just did not want to deal with it.
It's the third recast.
Exactly. But I mean, like, they've done it with Batman and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, but it was a tighter timeline than Batman and Superman.
And you know the argument that I always will make for Spider-Man is the fact that the money play was the Andrew Garfield run because they wanted to keep it in their pocket and not let it go to Marvel.
Yeah.
So if you're talking about doing something solely for money or keeping the rights to a property, it was the two Andrew Garfield movies, not the move to recast and have Tom Holland and do a crossover with Marvel. That's the best thing that they ever did for the character.
Yes, and I do agree with that.
It was brilliantly done. But the reboot initially with Andrew Garfield was 100% a money play. It wasn't a director or a studio going in like, oh, we love Spider-Man so much. We think he has commentary for this time period. We think he has relevance for this age group. Mm-hmm. We think that he belongs back on the screen. No, it was, we are terrified that they're going to take away a property that is a giant moneymaker for us, and we don't want to see that happen. So we have to use him, or he's going to go to this back to Marvel. And that, to me, is the most ridiculous use of a property or a reason to make a movie at all.
Yes. Like,
should have never happened. It just should have never happened. That one gets me high. Like, for sure.
I mean, it's fair, you know? I accidentally interrupted Andrew with. The issue for me with Spider-Man was that the timeline was so tight, right?
Yes.
When I gave my initial answer, I was talking about reboots in general. I was, like, not necessarily talking about superhero movies yet, because that's obviously very different. That's a whole different ball game when it comes to reboots. But every other kind of reboot thing had a little bit more of a stretched timeline, or it was only one or two movies. Whereas we went from a whole Spider-Man trilogy to immediately Andrew Garfield, because all of a sudden superhero movies were big again, because Spider-Man pretty much revolutionized the superhero movie.
Spider-Man and X-Men.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, they were what was big, and everyone, I mean, I don't know anybody who doesn't like Spider-Man 2. So
no, nobody doesn't like Spider-Man. Everybody loves Spider-Man 2. You're right.
So
it's solid.
It's so solid. So, like, of course I was like, oh, here we go again. Like, you could tell they were only doing it because superhero movies are big again. So, like, the only reason people were so, like, meh about Spider-Man, except for Spider-Man fans, was because it was the third time in, like, the same 15 years.
Yeah.
It was like, it better be something different, or else we don't really want it. And it was something different, thank God.
Yes. Yeah. And I think its strength, and I agree with what Andrea was saying about the Disney, since we're talking Disney, the Disney reboots. So Cinderella, Beauty and the Beast, Jungle Book, upcoming Mulan, Little Mermaid, Aladdin, Lion King, there is still a story to tell in a new and different way. And I think Disney loves to play with that. They love to reimagine their fairy tales. You see it across when they do something like Maleficent, where you give the villain, a higher role, or, you know, really sort of like twist the fairy tale a little bit to reflect something new and different.
Yeah, I think that Snow White and the Huntsman.
Snow White and the Huntsman, yes. Or Alice in Wonderland really plays differently with its characters.
Or the Jungle Book for the third time. Disney has done the Jungle Book three times. Disney
itself. What was the second one?
It was on the list. It's a live action, like, 90s one.
But
the animals didn't talk. It was actually based on the Kipling stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's good. It's good, but it creeped me out as a kid. But we'll get there.
Okay. I'm all on board for all of these new Disney reboots. I think you have to put the conversation that it is about money. They know how to make money. They're good at money. They're business.
Oh, Disney makes, like, the most money.
Like,
other than Jeff Bezos.
Right. So it's not to say it's not a money play. It is. And so I don't think making money is inherently evil or bad. That's ridiculous. We have to make it in this world. But I think Disney says, who can we tell these stories? What fresh voices are out there, or voices that we love to hear from over and over again? Because sometimes they cast our faves like Jon Favreau for Jungle Book. But he told a beautiful story. And I think if your story is solid and the reason you're telling it is pure, then make as much money as you want to from it. If you're only doing it to make money, like the Andrew Garfield Spider-Mans, that comes through. There's a reason why those did not continue on. There's a reason why their Sinister Six and their whole world building really didn't play out well, because everybody felt it was a money play. It just felt that way.
Yes, I completely agree. And I mean, just to wrap the whole entire thing, this is actually a really good discussion topic, but unless we are in the meetings when they're having these discussions of rebootable movies and stuff like that, we really don't know much of the motivation, but we can see it with how they present their movies. Interestingly enough, I feel like to answer one of the last questions before we move on, what makes them want to reboot a TV show or a movie instead of going with a new concept? I feel like it's that sense of knowing what works and fearing the unknown of how a new concept will be perceived. I feel like a lot of TV shows, a lot of movies are playing it safe at this point, and there's not a lot of originality, and I wish we could go back into creating new worlds, creating new characters, creating new stories, but I think we've reached a point where a lot of people just want to go back and recreate instead of doing something new. But that's something else that we can discuss in another episode.
As a tiny addendum, I do think that Netflix is one of the companies that is making really dynamic, new, fresh stories on the reg and not really having to play on nostalgia. Yep. Sometimes they do, like in a Fuller House, but even when they do take something that has been done, like Lost in Space, they're really re-envisioning it in a very spectacularly different way that breathes fresh life into something that could deserve to have fresh life breathed into it. There's nothing to say that those things that we loved as kids or those movies that we loved couldn't benefit from, because think of how many Jane Austen's movies, how many Pride and Prejudice, I love every single one of them. And if you made 10 more Pride and Prejudice, I'd watch all of them. Yeah. But that's because somebody new coming in is reinventing a character that I love. So that there's something to be said for doing it. Yeah. It's just, what's your motivation? Exactly. And that's, I think, what was the initial question. So you really hit that really well, Andrea. So go team.
Yep.
We can talk a long time
when
on
you're
this,
willing. When you're willing to invest the money in new talent and new stories, you'll have them.
Right.
Unfortunately, production companies and studios are slower to the uptake than television companies and Netflix.
Well, Netflix is quick though. Netflix is fast. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think they banked on the fact that they really benefited from it because they were willing to do that because they knew other places weren't.
Well, they're innovators and leaders in their field. Mm-hmm. And I think whenever somebody is innovating in the field instead of playing on nostalgia, it shows.
Yeah.
Stop resting your laurels on the past and look to the future of what you can change and make different about. Netflix has changed the entire landscape. I just talked about this on Random Chatter last night. Netflix has changed the entire landscape of how we consume media and how we consume television. Mm-hmm. And that's apparent in their storytelling.
Yeah.
Just like Disney has been in the past, and I think still is.
Absolutely.
Speaking of Disney,
because we spent a lot longer than we planned to.
I enjoyed this conversation. It just makes me think of reboots.
I'm glad you were here for it, Andrea, since you weren't here for our reboot episodes.
Worse. Thank you, David.
Yeah, thank you for that question, David. It's a good one. We weren't quite sure how to answer it at first, but clearly we had something to say on it.
We figured it out. I guess it's like reading it out loud, probably.
Sometimes that really helps. So we are talking live action Disney villains, right? And you guys talked about cartoon or animated villains last week, Disney's animated villains. So some of these are going to have a crossover, right? Because they're doing all of their live action reboots and things like that. So we're going to have a lot of probably similar ones on the lists, which is exciting.
Yeah.
Who wants to go first?
I can go.
I did my list the last time. So somebody else.
All right, Shannon.
So I want to start with the one I want to talk about the most, which is just get it out of the way, guys. Let's just get it out of the way. Everybody knows my favorite live-action Disney movie is Sky High. And it has nothing to do with anybody in it. I just really liked it when it came out. I thought it was a really good, portrayal of, like, comic books, right? Mm-hmm. It felt like a comic book in motion. And so that's what made it so fun and appealing for kids. And also it was just fun and appealing for kids. It was about a bunch of teenagers in a superhero high school. Like, what's better than that?
It reminds me of Scott Pilgrim. in some ways. It's an interesting movie.
It's like a less edgy Scott Pilgrim with younger characters who actually have drive in their lives. So the villain in Sky High, sorry to spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it, is actually Gwen Grayson, who is the popular girl who is trying to get in with Will, and she's only trying to get in with Will, so she, in the most roundabout way, get to her weapon that she used when she was a supervillain 20 years ago or whatever, because she got de-aged. And went through high school again, which got one of the greatest villain lines of all time, which was delivered by Patrick Warburton, because he voiced her villain suit, Royal Pain, which is, I went through puberty twice for this. She
it's like
just
Twilight.
It's so good. It's so funny. She like, you know, she's a popular girl, and like you can tell something's weird about her. She's like too perfect. And, you know, her friends are kind of bullies. And then, you know, as they start treating his side, Will Stronghold's sidekick friends like crap, you're starting to realize, like, yeah, there's something not right here. This doesn't seem to be just about popularity. And it turns out, yeah, she had a bunch of the upperclassmen, like, as her evil henchmen. But she was, like, a supervillain that Will Stronghold's dad took care of. They didn't know what happened to Royal Pain, who they thought was a guy. It turns out Royal Pain just was de-aged and spent the next 17-odd years planning to turn all the superheroes into babies and turning everyone into babies and training them all to be supervillains. It's buck wild. But thanks to Will Stronghold, War and Peace, Layla, who for some reason doesn't have a last name, and the sidekicks, they stopped her. But it's just such a kid's movie, and it's so much fun, and the villain, the writing is hilarious. So, like, there were some really, really great lines. And half of them were delivered by Patrick Warburton, which I shouldn't even have to explain. That's incredible in and of itself. But I love Sky High, and I think the villain is just hilarious. I think Gwen is great.
I literally don't know any of the words that you just said. I've never seen it, and I
Lizzie,
don't know
we gotta
what
get you
you're
to
talking
watch
about.
Sky High. We gotta get you to watch Sky High. Listen, Kurt Russell.
I was like, all right.
You got Bruce Campbell.
Okay.
You got Steven Strait.
Sure.
You got Daniel
like,
Panabaker.
I know some of them. Yeah. Like, I've never seen this movie.
Are you saying
so, like,
you
majority
know who
of
Kurt
what
Russell
you said?
Is?
No, I know who Kurt Russell is.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
Linda
I know
Carter.
Yeah, I know who people are.
They're
the
all
other
in
words
it
you said, as far as every character name ever in this movie, was mystery to me.
Well, you should watch it because it's great. It's like an hour and
clearly
a half. Clearly. Because it's a early 2000s Disney live-action theatrical release movie, so it's only like an hour and a half.
I mean, it's definitely something that is up my alley. Obviously, you know how I feel about Disney. And it sounds like something I would like. I just, explained the whole plot and I didn't know what you're talking about.
I had to talk about the villain. No one was,
that was amazing.
No one was jumping in. So I had to take the reins.
Sure. I just wanted to let you know I didn't jump in because I don't know what you're talking about.
It's great. You should go home and watch it.
I was introduced to Sky High by Shannon when she came to my apartment.
I saw it in theaters. So,
oh my God, I love that she got you into it.
I was two wine bottles in.
She was a little drunk.
Everything was a little bit fuzzy halfway through. All I remember is Steven Strait with long hair throwing fire from his hands, and that's about it. And him kissing a man, and that's it. That's all I remember.
That's a different movie.
Oh, was it? See, I don't even know anymore.
Oh, see, Andrea doesn't know anything about it either.
Sky High, War and Peace, kisses another man.
Clearly,
just wrote the next movie.
We need to have Fangirl Confessional Movie Night and live tweet
oh
this
my
thing.
God. This is the funny. Yes, please.
Clearly,
because this is the funniest thing, and I want to see you guys watch this.
All right, we'll
oh
have
my
to plan.
God.
Listeners, what do you think about a live tweeting movie night, Fangirl Confessional style? We watch Sky High. Let us know. You know what we should do? We should each pick a movie that we want to do this with and do, like, pick a night, and then we'll do it. Like, we'll watch, like, 3 weeks in a row, we'll do, like, a little live tweeting event.
Yeah.
So we'll start to put some polls out and figure out what movies we each want to watch. I think we know Shannon's.
Yeah, most definitely. Do we need that wine for this one? Again.
No, because you'll not remember the movie. You'll think War and Peace kissed a guy. So I don't know.
You have to find out where it's available for us to watch it. Hulu,
I have it.
Amazon. Well, okay, but I mean, like, we can't. We're not all in the same place, Shannon.
No, I got my ways.
She has her ways.
There's
okay.
things like Rabbit.
Okay.
And all that, and Skype screen share. So, like, I got you.
Okay. Shannon's got us covered. I love it. So what else do you have, or is Sky High the only one?
Oh, no. I have a couple. I've seen a lot of Disney movies in my day.
It's the only one.
It's not the only one. I also want to talk about the Sanderson sisters.
Oh, well, duh.
I've never watched Hocus Pocus.
Whoa!
Now you're talking about an era that I grew up in.
Halloween movie night.
Like, I know the sisters, but, like, and I've seen snippets of the movie, but Hocus Pocus... Maybe this Halloween I'll have to do it.
Yeah.
We could have a special Halloween movie night.
Yes, because you need to meet Winifred, Sarah, Mary, and Binks. No, nobody, just them. That's all that matters. Maybe the little sister, but for the most part, Binks. So Hocus Pocus, I don't need to explain the plot. We all know what Hocus Pocus is for Andrea. But these witches...
We don't want to give it away for if we're going to make her watch it.
No, yeah. I'm just going to say what happens at the beginning. These witches can, like, take kids and use them to keep themselves young. Like, they eat their essence. You find that in the very first 5 minutes of the movie. I won't tell you anything else about it. But the Sanderson sisters, the three of them, Winnie, Mary, and I just forgot the other one's name already, Sarah... First of all, you have Bette Midler is the leader, and she's so good. Like, they're scary, but they're also funny. I mean, watching Mary fly around on a vacuum cleaner or when they go, when they're out with the trick-or-treaters and they go to that, I don't want to give this joke away because it's so funny, but they go to that guy's house. And they suck up to him. Hilarious. Like, you want to be afraid of them, but at the same time, because they're from the past and have no idea what the heck is going on, they're at the same time hilarious. And so I love Hocus Pocus. It's top Halloween movie every year. And the Sanderson sisters and their desire to take all the children and Binks the cat. Incredible. I love Hocus Pocus. And Billy. I forgot Billy. Billy Bones.
It's a great movie. I love that movie.
I was waiting to see if Lizzie was going to say more.
I don't have anything else to add. It's a good movie. It's not on one of my favorite villains lists, but I really like it.
Oh, okay. I see.
I don't feel like they're like villains in a classic sense. So yeah. I don't really like, because we're on their side and we love them. I don't feel that way for them as villains, but I get what you're saying. And I understand why it would be on the list. It just doesn't categorize for me. So yeah, I really like the movie, but as far as villains are concerned, that's not one for me.
Wait, you were rooting for the Sanderson sisters?
You know, you love them though. It's not even that you root for them. But it's not like, I don't necessarily root for any of the other, well, maybe one. But, like, I don't root for a lot of the other villains on my list. Like, they're villains. I love them because...
That's what I'm saying, yeah. I was like, wait, why am I on their side if they're stealing children?
Well, I know. Like, you love them. I think it's different for me. But I get why you put it on here. But it's not one on my list for villains. But I love this movie. We'll talk about it. We'll definitely probably talk about it in Halloween.
Okay.
When we do like a Halloween.
It's hard to talk about it when you have someone here who hasn't seen it.
So we'll have to watch it. Talk about our favorite Halloween movies and really delve into it, I think. What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, I like it.
What else do you have? This next one is amazing. Go. I have some along this line. So let's do the ones that are like this. Go.
Okay. So when I was trying to decide what Disney movies I've seen to talk about, which isn't a lot, actually, of live-action movies, one that my finger landed upon was Remember the Titans, which doesn't have a villain per se, but the villain is racism.
Yes.
Like, that's the whole plot of the movie, is that they had these kids, and they integrated the school.
I've never seen Remember the Titans.
It's been so long. They basically, aside from the school, they integrate the football team. Okay, they bring in a black assistant coach. It's Denzel.
I know Denzel's in it. That's the only thing I know about it. That it's about football. And those are the two things I know.
Yeah, and then they integrate the football team as well. And so you have these racist teenagers, these racist white teenagers, having to work with these black kids that have been treated so poorly by the white teenagers that they're also, like, antagonistic towards them. So it's a whole back and forth, and they're forced to go to football camp together and bunk with each other, and they all are given, like, buddies, like a buddy system kind of style thing. And eventually they start to respect each other and value each other as human beings, and they overcome racism even when the town around them doesn't.
Interesting.
Yeah, so racism is the villain, and the football players tackled racism. And they got a first down.
Tackled.
So, I love Remember the Titans, though. I don't watch it a ton because, like, it's one of those movies where, like, I've seen it, so I know what happens. It's a drama, so it's like, I don't watch a ton of dramas multiple times, but when it's on, I'll watch bits and pieces of it because it's enjoyable. There's also, like, moments of levity and everything else, and I love Denzel, so, like, eh. But, yeah, racism is the villain of Remember the Titans. And Holes. And Holes. It's one of the villains in Holes. Racism.
There you go. Yeah. I put on my list, just out of irony and to follow Shannon's lead here, I put the Depression as one of the villains in Mary Poppins.
I saw that.
Because, again, Mary Poppins doesn't really have, like, a villain in the classic sense. Right. It's more about the magic of it. But for Mr. Banks, the Depression does, and his job and his station in life is sort of his the thing, the driving force for him. And it does become sort of an antagonist in his life and in the life of the kids and in life of everybody once they do the bank run and everything happens with that. So I just put it on there ironically. The other one I put on ironically just for Shannon was Poverty in the Newsies.
Yes.
Well, and also Pulitzer. Pulitzer is one of the villains. Is the newspaper moguls play the role of villain, but I think that they did shady stuff. Let's just be real. But I think the greater villain for the Newsies is the poverty that they face in the time period and trying to make a living and trying to make money for their families. So I'm just putting that on there for you as a little. That sometimes, because sometimes the villains aren't necessarily an evil character or Darth Vader style bad guy. It is sort of a situation that someone's put in that can be a villain to your life. Mm-hmm. I'm sure if we sat down and really discussed villains that the three of us face, it wouldn't be like a personification of a witch or like a real bad guy in our life, but these sort of situations. So to see that play out in a movie is very relatable.
It's interesting that you mentioned that because aside from like the racism, the poverty, like these things that are kind of human created, if for lack of a better word, I do have in my list a movie where nature is the villain, and that's 8 Below. And that was my first exposure to Paul Walker. And I don't know if you guys have seen 8 Below.
I have not, but I love Paul Walker, so you had my attention.
Honestly, it's the most, if you love dogs, if it's a really emotional movie. It's, I think, based on real life events of this group of dogs that get stranded, and it's kind of like their survival story as the main character, who is Paul Walker, tries to find them, and it's honestly, made me love huskies so much. And that's one of the ones where, like, again, nature is terrible and there's nothing you can do to save these animals. It's just pure instinct. So I thought that was a really interesting movie.
Mm. Yeah.
So also, I mean, it's not Disney, but Fern Gully, villain, is really global warming and climate change.
Yeah.
And like, and sort of forestation and like tearing it down and that kind of thing.
The Secret of Nim. Villains.
Oh,
are
Secret
also
of Nim.
Men.
Oh, that movie terrified me as a kid, but it's beautiful at the same time. It made me cry so hard. And then, have you ever read the book? I haven't read the book, but my dad is like, you should read the book. Oh, rough.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, sometimes it's man or sometimes it's a social construct. Like, anything can be an antagonist. It's how you tell the story.
Yeah, and I think that racism obviously plays a part in a lot of movies that we see. I have never seen Remember the Titans, but I remember it coming out and the reception to it. I feel like it handles it really well and, like, kicks it in the butt.
Mm-hmm.
Love to see it be kicked in the butt. Still to this day that we have movies where that has to be dealt with is appalling to me, but it's important.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I think another villain I have to talk about, and again, it's another one you guys apparently don't know, is Paolo from the Lizzie McGuire movie.
I never saw the Lizzie McGuire movie.
Awful. He's terrible. Paolo is bad. There, I said it.
Moving on.
You did it.
It's hard to talk about it, like, because it's just like, he was just a bad. He was not good. He tricked her, and he's bad. Paolo.
There you go.
So here, now we have a cast of characters. It's Barbossa, Davy Jones, Cutler Beckett, and Armando Salazar from the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Well, and we all have Pirates of the Caribbean on our list.
Yes.
Let's finally, thank God, something we can all talk about.
Yes.
So let's start with Barbossa then.
Wait. Before we start, I was about to start singing the Lord of the Rings movie, and I do not know why that was about to start playing in my head when I thought of Pirates of the Caribbean. I think it's because of Orlando Bloom. But anyways, let's move on. Let's talk about Pirates.
What's great about this is it's put up so many good villains that we could choose from. They're great. I mean, even Johnny Depp plays a villain in his own right sometimes in the way that you're never quite sure if he's going to side with Will and Elizabeth or not. And so he even plays that role at times, though
he's
like the Sanderson.
Neutral.
Yeah, he is like the Sanderson sisters where we do love them and we root for them. Or for him. For me, it's Barbossa 100% because he's another one. That goes back and forth and back and forth. And in episode 5 or in entry number 5, Dead Men Tell No Tales, you love him more than any of the other ones before that. Mm-hmm. It really like cemented my love for him as a character. But he is in the first one, the splash he makes as the villain is unforgettable.
So good.
It's the reason why this franchise has the stronghold that it does and has the longevity that it does, I believe, is that first movie and his role when he's like, you best start believing in ghost stories, Miss Turner. You're in one. Like, that part gives me chills every time. I used to watch it on repeat in the trailer because I was like, I need to see this movie.
So good.
But you could pick between. Shannon's list is more extensive because all of them made a splash for
all
you.
All of them except, I guess, the one from Strange Tides. So I never.
Number 4 was the worst one.
Yeah, I never saw that. I kind of put them all because I remember all of them. I remember them all distinctly, and I remember all of their actions distinctly. And, like, I mean, I only saw Dead Men Tell No Tales because I didn't want to see any other movie that was out, and my mom really wanted to go to a movie, and I figured I'd put up with Johnny Depp for my mom.
And it was so good, though.
It was good. I actually liked the newer part of the story more than I liked Johnny Depp's arc. Aside from Johnny Depp.
Right.
I actually cared about them. I wanted them to succeed. I wanted them to get what they wanted, especially like when I realized the one kid was Will Turner's son.
Oh my gosh, it's the best. I think
it was so good.
But I think we've talked about before the reason, I don't know if we talked about it here, but I think I discussed it on Random Chatter, is the reason why number four doesn't work at all is because Johnny Depp's Jack Sparrow has to be the gravy, not the main course. Yeah. He has to be the gravy.
If he's
got to just play that role of comic relief, will he, won't he sort of character. And in number four, they give him the whole pie and it does not work at all. So to and reel it back is the right move.
Yeah.
Because he's wonderful.
That's why I think the first movie is the one that stands out to me the most. It has such a perfect balance and it was so new, so rich. And I just, out of all of them, I will always go back to the first one, Barbossa, and that one, like Liz said, chills. Loved everything of it.
I mean, the best part about the first one is that you knew whose story it was.
Yes.
Right? You knew what the story was. It was about Will trying to go save Elizabeth because he's been in love with her all this time. And also because he wants to find out who his father was. Like, it turns out being a mixed thing. When it started becoming heavily, like, more and more heavily Jack Sparrow, it became harder to follow the story. Like, what is our goal here? What are we doing? Like, I don't...
See, I'm a big fan of the first trilogy because I really love At World's End.
I love At World's End.
I love that movie. And I think it's because I really love the story of Elizabeth and Will told through the eyes of Jack Sparrow. Like, you really see them through his eyes. And that's why I love number five coming back around full circle and finishing off their story. It was the best move they could have ever made.
I almost cried.
Oh, my gosh.
When they were reunited, I almost cried.
Oh, my gosh. It's so beautifully done. I did cry. My second favorite villain.
There and I was like, Will and Elizabeth.
I know. My second favorite villain is Davy Jones. I think Bill Nye played that role beautifully.
So
I love
good.
When
I love his mouth moves. When he talks his that thing.
Yeah. With all the
life. Oh, my God.
And or even like his love story with Calypso, like being interspersed in there where you're sort of sad for him in a way. Like I do love a villain that has like a reason why, like, I don't know, that we get a little deeper with them, peel back the surface on why maybe they are the way that they are. Not with everybody, but sometimes with a villain I like it. I love him as a secondary character. Now, the other ones I don't love as much as those two, but I do, they're still good characters. But those two, for me, are the two that I always come back to.
Yeah. I just thought Javier Bardem did such a great job. He was terrifying.
Yeah.
I was very afraid of Captain Salazar. I was, like, very creeped out by him.
Yeah, I'd put him up there. He's good. He's pretty good. You're right. I haven't seen that one as many times.
True. Yeah, you guys put more weight into how many times you've seen a thing more than I do. Because I remember that back from the superhero one. Because for me, it's just like what makes something more memorable the first time I watch it.
Yeah.
Whereas you guys put more weight on which ones you watch more, which is fair. It's just a very different way of looking at things, and I find it interesting.
Yeah, when I think the more times I watch something, the more times it becomes a part of my like headcanon, and more times I like go to it in my mind. And so if I've only seen something one or two times, which is with the fifth movie, I've only seen it twice. I can't have that feeling about it the way that I have about Barbossa because I've seen that one like 100 times.
Yeah.
So that's just how my barometer works. Like I have to really absorb something to really have it enter that higher level.
Yeah.
But sometimes something comes along that really punches through and it's like undeniable. That's a real thing.
Yeah.
So I think Javier Bardem in Casino Royale, or was he in Casino Royale?
Skyfall.
Oh my gosh.
We talked about him in the reboot episode.
Oh my gosh. As far as like Bond villain goes, like I've seen Bond movies over and over again. His Bond villain, it cut through for me because it was epic. So sometimes that comes along and he's that kind of actor. So I could understand that 100%. It's just, he doesn't, Barbossa is Barbossa for me. And I bet Andrew agrees.
I do love Barbossa.
He's just magical. I love him. Now, you skipped over when I was excited to talk about. Go back.
What?
You skipped over when I was excited to talk about.
I don't know which one. I was going to go back. I was trying to do my whole list.
I'm just double checking. Go ahead through your pace. I just want to make sure you don't skip
it. I don't know which one now.
Well, okay. I'll wait for you to bring it back around. Go.
Is it Tony Perkis?
I don't know what that is.
I don't know either.
Yeah, it wasn't that.
No, you go through at your own pace. I just want to make sure you weren't missing it.
I'll go back. I'm almost on my list anyway. I want to talk about The White Queen. I want to talk about Tilda Swinton in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Epic villain. And I didn't realize it was Disney. Or I think I knew that, but I thought because it switches around, it doesn't, like, it's on the list, but they handled it. The they only handled thing they handled correctly was the two movies instead of the franchise, which is sad.
Yes.
Yeah. But
that's what happens when you start with the second book.
I know. Like, the first book is my favorite book in the entire series. Yeah, it's wonderful.
It's everybody's favorite book. That's the one that we had to read in school. Like, they didn't have us do the series. They just had us read The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Oh, no. My favorite book is the first book. Magician's Nephew is my favorite book in the whole series. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
It explains how Narnia came to be. It's the reason for Narnia. So the reason why, but I understand why they'd start with the second, because that's what everybody knows. Mm-hmm. But the first book is so good. I'm always sad when they don't really take the entire, like, Narnia is a tough franchise. It is really rooted in a lot of religion and a lot of spiritual tones. Mm-hmm. And I think it gets weighed down if you have to consider it in a secular world. I think it could be handled really beautifully, though. It's not like, it's just not an easy story to tell across the entire canon, because they skip around and jump around timelines. So if you're getting kid actors, you have to be really aware of that. So they went with the three movies that really deal with the four Pevensies the most. I'm obviously a huge Narnia fan, clearly. But I thought they handled this movie so perfectly. And Tilda Swinton is the best casting decision for the White Queen.
She was amazing. Yeah. She was so regal and so scary. And I fell in love with her as a person in that movie. That was
like a bad bee is what she is.
A bad bee.
Driving
for
through Narnia, giving out Turkish delights in her creepy carriage.
I loved it.
Along those same lines, you have to sort of put Edmund in a villain category for a little while, because he is seduced by that. Mm-hmm. He's one of my favorite characters because he's the most relatable. Mm-hmm. I think he and Lucy come off as the most relatable because they are sort of, they do take that rabbit hole. They do go down the rabbit hole. And instead of being above it and saying, like, why would you ever open the door in the first place? Or why would you ever accept the Turkish delight in the first place? Yeah. I think it's so understandable why he would. And it's so understandable that he got sucked into the White Witch's, like, spell and her presence and her air. Like, that's who she is and what she does. And his character arc is beautiful to see. Like, Prince Caspian makes me cry every time I watch it, just because it's just beautiful. And
I love him. He's perfect.
Yeah, so we have to put Edmund on that list with her as a sort of an addendum, because he does belong in the villain category for a while. He's really working against his siblings, and you really hope he doesn't, but he does. And he gets this whole redemption that's beautiful. With Aslan, that scene where he's talking to Aslan, and you sort of get the sense that he's gotten forgiveness in the midst of that. It's just beautifully done. Yeah. I love this movie so much.
It's interesting because when I was looking at just the actors and actresses, I did not know Liam Neeson was Aslan, and I want to go back and watch the movie and just
hear that voice.
Oh, you'll hear it. It's like when you, now you'll not never be able to not hear it. But I love his voicing of that character. It's the perfect choice for Aslan, because Aslan is sort of the God character, the Christ character. And so to pick somebody with that sort of such a comforting voice and its comforting timbre is the perfect choice. I love him. I love this movie. Thank you both for putting it on there. I didn't even think to put it on mine because I guess I forgot it was Disney, or didn't put it in there because I felt like they mishandled it. So I took it out of there. I took it off their shelf because I don't give it to them.
Oh, goodness.
I know. I'm harsh, Shannon. I'm harsh.
Okay, we all have things we're harsh about.
Yeah, I know.
We all do. So, getting close to the end of, like, things I can, like, actually talk about. But I kind of talked about it in the last episode, and I want to spend a few minutes on it now before I go into my honorable mention. I only have one honorable mention. I want to talk about Luke Evans's Gaston. I love him.
Perfect. Like, he's so good.
He's so
the embodiment of him.
Yeah, and he has such a grasp of what Gaston actually represents, mm-hmm. as opposed to, like, the village version. Because, like, people would ask Luke Evans a question about Gaston, he very seriously say, like, well, Gaston. Like, very seriously, very straight, like, no, he's the villain. Like, I think somebody asked him, I forget what the exact question was, but he looked at them straight-faced, just like, no, Gaston's the villain. He's very bad.
Well, what's funny is I think even Disney, like, plays on that, because they have him as a character that you meet, and he doesn't necessarily play, like, a nefariousness to it in his role at the parks when you go take a picture with him.
Yeah.
He's sort of misogynistic and, like, that like, gruff.
He's misogynistic.
It is. They try to play it off as, like, oh, isn't he adorably misogynistic and
We're
sexist?
We're so progressive.
Yeah. But so I think even Disney doesn't, like, necessarily play him or put him in the villain category. Mm-hmm. They put him in, I don't know what category they put him in, but so it's, I like hearing him say that when he's like, no, he's the worst.
I'll find you the interview, but.
Yeah, I'm going to want to watch that.
First of all, his voice is great. Let's just put that out there. He's a great singer. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But just, like, you get that vibe that, like, I mean, as you watch the movie, you see even LeFou is just like, yo, dog.
He's like, really?
This is, like,
this what we're
not
doing?
Not good. Yeah, like, when he ties up Maurice.
Oh, the father. Yeah.
Yeah, when he ties up Maurice, and LeFou is like, we can't leave him out here. There's, like, wolves.
He's like, so what you're saying is, you're gonna leave him here to die, is what you're saying.
Yeah, like, he, and he has that, they changed one of the lines, like, the delivery of one of the lines from the mob song. For LeFou, and LeFou is very much just like, no, this is very bad. I mean, to the point where I forget the exact line, obviously, but, like, the way he sings it, it's a line about Gaston, where it's just, like, it's about the duality of, like, handsome being good and things like that. Like, that thing that we put in our head, like, beautiful is good. Like, no, it's not.
Right.
But he hits that note in the mob song, but to the point where, like, he realizes that what Gaston is doing is so bad that in the final battle, he changes sides. And in one of the funniest scenes with Mrs. Potts, where she, like, is like, oh, he treats you so badly, dear. And, like, that, just that cute little exchange. Like, yeah, we're having we're in a rough patch right now. Like, Gaston is so dastardly. I mean, to the point where the guy gets happy and feels better when he thinks about the war. Like, he is horrendous. Like, aside from the adorable misogyny of Gaston, he literally turns an entire village against a beast because the woman he wants to bang loves the beast.
Yep, he's pretty bad.
He's very bad. Like, his influence is as, like, the most popular man in the village, the richest man in the village, whatever it is that he is, he uses that as a weapon. He forces people to go along with his plans, even when people know that they're not good and not fair. Because, oh, it's Gaston.
Let's be honest. If we were there back then and he just fluttered his eyes and he just sang to me, I'd be like, okay, let's kill the beast.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'd all have trouble being like, no, beauty's on the inside, right?
I'd be like, yes.
We'd be like, I'm sorry, did you see his face? Because he sang to me. We're good.
Oh,
we're good.
God.
We digress.
Shannon was hoping we would go higher, and we did not.
I didn't know that's where we were going.
We went below the belt.
We went low.
Oh my god.
Andrea and I are the swooning girls on the side.
Yes.
Meanwhile, Shannon is like, books!
Yeah, books. Shannon is Belle, and we're like, ah!
Books everywhere. But he's a very effective villain. And I think they handled him really, really, really well in the remake, like we were saying, with reboots, that there are things you can do that weren't necessarily done. I mean, this movie wasn't made for kids. This movie was made for the people who loved Beauty and the Beast when they were kids.
Yeah. Right.
And so it reflects that by showing you, yeah, Gaston is a bad guy. His misogyny isn't cute. And he literally incited a mob to go kill somebody, like an innocent person. And he was going to leave another innocent person to get eaten by wolves. Like, that is the beauty of something like Beauty and the Beast made for an older crowd, is that we understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And they are presenting it because we understand it.
Exactly.
Luke Evans for the win.
Yes. Amen.
So I'll just talk about one last thing. It's not a Disney movie, but I really wanted to talk about it. I want to talk about Hook. Dustin Hoffman, so good. So good. As James Hook. And he plays so effectively against both, all three, against Robin Williams as Peter, his son Jack, and Tinkerbell. Play Tinkerbell. It's someone famous. And looking back,
Julia Roberts.
Julia Roberts is Tinkerbell. And he was so... This was another movie that felt like it was made for a slightly older crowd.
It definitely was.
It definitely was. It was more keyed towards fathers, you could tell, because it was about a father and son relationship. And the father and son relationship was used by the villain to win over the son. Like, it was something that he pushed on. Like, oh, your dad sucks. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'll be a better dad. Like, look, here I am at your baseball game. Like... That's what makes it so menacing, is that he picked up on this son's insecurities and this son's desires to turn him against Peter and to get him to stay. And it almost worked. And that's what's so, like, as the poor sister is, like, shrieking at him, like, Dustin Hoffman did such an incredible job as Hook. And you felt that menacing undertone underneath. And so while it's not a Disney movie, since Peter Pan is like we all think of Peter Pan as a Disney thing. I really, you know, Tinkerbell brings you in almost, well, she used to bring you into all the movies. She doesn't really so much anymore with the new intro, but she used to always, you know, tap the
show. She doesn't?
Not anymore.
They took her away?
They did.
Why?
I think she's kind of there. She's kind of there, but she's just a light now. It's not the character Tinkerbell.
I mean, she's a huge presence at the park. She's in the fireworks show and Happily Ever After.
Everybody knows who Tinkerbell is.
She flies out of the castle.
Yeah.
The one thing I wish they would have done with Hook that they did in the... I'm a big fan of the stage production with Mary Martin. It's like one of my favorite... things. And in that show, Captain Hook is played by, it plays the same role as Mr. Darling.
So that's what they did with the new Peter Pan.
Yeah.
Live action with Jason Isaacs.
Right. I talked about that last week. This is the original thing that they did with the stage production. The Mary Martin one is one of the best ones. Mary Martin plays Peter Pan and she's perfection.
Yeah.
But the duality of that role, it's brilliant. And I wish they could have pulled that into Hook a little, because that really, the father-son thing is hit so much on the head that if they could have pulled that in a little bit and had Dustin be Peter's father in some way, or even, you know, I just somehow to sort of play on that role, that duality of that role, which they do also in Into the Woods with the Wolf and the Prince, mm-hmm. to use the juxtaposition of the two roles to play off each other. That's one of my favorite things about those stage productions of Peter Pan. It's one of the things that the... on, I think it was on NBC with Christopher Walken, that yes. stage production missed the boat by not doing that.
Yeah.
Because when you're able to draw that comparison with the way that Hook takes them in, especially in that film and in that production, in the context of that production, the way that Hook takes them in as his children and sort of raises them, even nefariously, even with his own, like, bad intentions, it really does raise that juxtaposition of the father, like, sort of a Mr. Banks, Mary Poppins character, having mm-hmm. to go to work and never seeing the children. And it's like these two sides of a coin. So I wish yeah. they could have brought that in somewhere, because that's the yeah. my favorite part about the stage production of Peter Pan. I think it's brilliant.
I think what makes it so hard is that Wendy is not a central character.
Right.
In,
Maggie Smith. So,
yeah. Yeah, it is Maggie Smith. And by introducing Peter as an orphan because he came from Neverland from the get-go, I think that's what made it so much more difficult, because you didn't have a father figure in that movie.
Well, you see him in the pram in the very, very beginning. Yeah. So he doesn't come from Neverland.
Oh, that's taken. Right. I had it backwards.
Yeah, he goes there in the very beginning. So he does have you do see his parents, but yeah. they're not part of the characterization. And this right. is 100% a reimagining
right.
of Peter Pan, not yeah. a reboot or anything like that. It's a reimagining, because
yeah.
they do take Peter out of his normal, what we normally see him as. And we're seeing him, like, I don't know, 20, 30 years later yeah. from when he was in Neverland, which is wonderful and brilliant. My dad hates this movie, by the way.
Wrong. But it's
I know.
Hard.
I always tell him that.
But the other thing is that, you know, since the father thing was always having to do with the darlings, you really, it's harder to pull that off in Hook, because it's not about the darlings necessarily. It's about her grandkids. But it's not about, that's why, you know.
Yeah.
Never no, watched I agree. It.
Yeah, well, you got to fix it.
I have to fix a lot of things.
That's okay, though. Like, you've had your own interactions with Peter in a different way, but that's the beauty of a story like that.
Right? Like, you've interacted. Bases here.
You and Pete.
Her and her best friend, Pete Pan.
On
yeah, you know
side
Pete.
Note, have you guys ever heard it? I don't remember what the name is. It's a Peter Pan song. Oh, who's the singer? And it's such a beautiful song. I'm going to find it, because if I don't, it's going to piss me off.
Well, while you find it, Shannon, are there any
yes,
other ones you want to mention before we go to the next one, because we're running out of time?
Exactly. No, this is why I probably should never go first. I didn't realize you guys hadn't seen any of the movies I was going to talk about.
Ruth,
to be
that's
fair.
Okay.
Lost Boy, if you guys have not heard
oh,
that
I
song.
Love that song.
It's such a child-loving kind of song, and it's about Peter Pan and just going to Neverland and you being a lost boy and finding yourself. Love it.
I love People Finding Neverland.
That's a great song. That's
I
a
love
great
the
movie.
Musical a lot. I saw it. It's really good.
Nice. I've never seen that one.
It's good. In that one, Hook is an inner part of J.M. Barrie, going
yeah.
almost along the lines of he imagines him, and then Hook tells him, I'm your darker thoughts. I am the other side of you that you don't show to anybody. And so
like
he uses that to become stronger as a person.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. No more honorable, any other mentions?
No, I literally just wanted to talk about Hook.
Oh.
I love Hook.
All right, so I guess I'll go, because I think that Liz and I have some similar ones.
Yeah, you guys have more similarities than I do.
The very first, I think that I'm going to put these in just together. I think I started remembering a lot more of the movies I've watched when my little brother was born. He was introduced to the Muppets by our aunt, and it just... The whole entire Muppet Show thing was amazing for me, although it was older, it was very different. So with that, it's the Muppet Christmas Carol. Mr. Scrooge, it just has a special place in my heart. Michael, I don't know if I'm going to say his name right. Kane.
Yeah, it's Michael Caine.
He does a phenomenal job as Mr. Scrooge, and I just love his character. And I don't know if I would classify him as a villain. He's just been through a lot, and I think that he's a character that you can relate to a little bit. I don't know. It's you understand him, and at the very end, there's kind of that redemption story. And I really enjoy this movie. There's a lot of nice music. The Christmas Carol has been done so many times. Disney did another one, but it was an animated one with Mickey Mouse and stuff like that, and I really enjoyed that one. The other one that's with the Muppets, that's very memorable, and Liz loves it as much as I do. We were singing yes. before we started recording.
Yes.
It's Treasure Island with Tim Curry. Phenomenal movie. The music is so exciting, so upbeat. Something Better. Cabin Fever is one of the ones that I like to dance to because it's so much fun. And A Professional Pirate is phenomenal.
That's my favorite one. I listen to it all the time.
So if you guys want to listen to us sing, you just have to let us know.
We literally will go through the entire soundtrack for you. This is one of my family's favorite movies. We watch this together all the time. We've watched it together since I was a kid. And it's just such a good retelling of the classic story, which again, like Christmas Carol, they're good at doing that. But they add in such fun ridiculousness. Like Rizzo and all the rats are also characters on the boat, but they're running like a cruise ship. Muppet Treasure Island is going on and they're like searching for buried treasure and the pirates are all on the ship. Meanwhile, Rizzo and all the rats are on like a yacht having like selling tickets and like doing a tour. Like, I love how he's taking like tours through like the sites when they're
I need to watch
a Monty Python
movie
vibe.
It does. It does have a little bit of a Monty Python. It's very like pokes fun at the genre, pokes fun at itself, but it's still like Tim Curry plays an amazing pirate, amazing Blackbeard at the end of the day. He's just really like solid in that role. So to inject Muppets into that and fun songs and like the boom shakalaka-laka one. I love that one too.
Yes.
Like such good music. If you've never seen it, watch it. It's wonderful.
It's really good.
It's on my list too. Tim Curry's 100% on my list as well.
When I was in grade three or four, we made a book. We were able to publish it, and mine was inspired by the Muppet Treasure Island. I still have it today.
That makes me so happy.
It's so cute. It's so adorable.
I need it. Andrea, I need it.
I might have to show you it. Yes,
please. I need a story. You got to do an Instagram story about it so I can see it.
Yes. Okay. It's drawings are fantastic, illustrated by me. It was just fantastic. Anyways, I want to go through just a couple ones. Cruella in 101 Dalmatians. She's fabulous. Another one that I don't think a lot of people talk about too much, and it's kind of sad because I think that I've watched this movie so many times, Flubber.
What?
Wilson Croft is an amazing villain. Christopher McDonald does a phenomenal job as Wilson, and it's just so funny how he's defeated. I enjoy this movie. Robin Williams did a phenomenal job.
That movie makes me cry.
Pardon?
That movie makes me cry.
It does. That little robot, what's her name?
Yes, when she dies
at
the end.
When she dies!
Oh! War flashbacks. Yeah. I'm having so many war flashbacks right now.
When she gets hit by the bat. So sad. I want to watch this movie again. I feel like this
too.
Is just, I have a list of things I need to watch now.
Yeah, I can't. I haven't been able to watch Robin Williams' movies since he passed away. It's still fresh for me. I haven't been able to watch Aladdin, Flubber, Hook, any of them. So maybe one day I'll be able to watch them again. I can't without just bawling. badly. Anyways, continue. That's too sad. Go.
Well, another Robin Williams movie. I didn't know it was Disney. It's Old Dog, so John Travolta and, well, Robin Williams. And it's
I've never seen that feel-good movie,
and it makes you laugh.
My dad loves that movie.
I love Old Dogs.
Because he's an old dog.
My dad really loves the movie, too. it's just... there's no villain other than yourself and the way that you treat people. You value the money, you value something other than the experience the experiences that you share with people. And that's the big message in the story. And I love this movie. So I would recommend it. It's a feel good movie. It makes you laugh. And I mean, it's Robin Williams and John Travolta. They're pretty awesome. Another movie, Santa Claus 2. The only Santa Claus movie that I really enjoy. Evil Santa is so scary because he's like a toy. And I have a huge Chucky and porcelain doll thing, and I hate them so much. So this movie was really scary because of that. And then the last two movies is Maleficent. Angelina Jolie did a phenomenal job as Maleficent.
Yes.
She was like the most amazing casting for a villain was her. She carried herself with so much amazingness and awesomeness, and I love her portrayal of Maleficent. And then the last one, The Jungle Book, and I'm going to say his name so poorly because I can never say anybody's names. Please help me. Who plays Shere Khan?
Oh, Idris Elba.
There we go. Because I am not... People make fun of me with the way that I pronounce names, so I will not do that. He did such an awesome job. You can feel that tension with... his voice, because that's all we get from him. And I do want to give a special shout out to Neil Sethi, because he plays such an adorable Mowgli, and he's just phenomenal, and he does a fantastic job being the only kind of human character that we get in the Jungle Book. He does an amazing job. So those are some of the things.
We're talking about 2016, by the way, guys, not 1994.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, because Idris Elba's not in
Jungle
that
Books.
One. Idris Elba's not in either of the other two.
No, he is not.
Also on Jungle Book, online with that, on par with that one, is Ka, played by Scarlett Johansson, to perfection.
Yes.
Her Ka is so good and creepy and seductive and a little bit sexy in there in a different way, playing on that role of her. She's on, I didn't put her on my list, but she's mentally on my list as far as villains go. Ka's one of those ones because he comes off as a friend at first, especially in the cartoon. And then he really, he does the flip the switch. He becomes a little tricky in the case of this. So that was a really, so I have Jungle Book on there too as Shere Khan, but also Ka really, really is just well played in the live action 2016, whatever it was made, for Shannon. Then the only other one, you guys covered everything. So I don't really have much else on mine other than Kate Blanchett as the evil stepmother in Cinderella. she's brilliant in that role in the live action Cinderella. And then,
oh my gosh.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, she's like Tilda Swinton levels, like evil and like just, I feel like they're up for a lot of similar roles sometimes. She just has that glare and that way of
striking face. It's a striking face.
Yes. But she also has a way of like using her eyes to convey like deep loathing. Like she's so good
so
at that.
Relatable.
I mean,
so relatable.
I mean, consider, oh my God, we talked about it in the last episode. Oh my God, what is her name? from Snow White and the Huntsman.
Charlize Theron.
Charlize Theron, yeah. She like,
yes. Oh,
oh
yeah.
My God, her face embodied murder. Like,
yeah,
she
she's a good
said
one too.
Her walk is like, you know, I forget the first part, but the second part is and think murder.
Yeah.
And like, you felt it because her face, she conveys it very well with her face.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think Kate Blanchett really has that thing. That's why she plays a really great Hela too. And Thor, I mean, she's just a great villain. She has that thing about her. I also have, I put, this one's on par with Shannon's racism. Stereotypes are the villain in High School Musical.
I love the fact that
stick
you mentioned
this. Stick to the status quo, Liz.
Stick to the status quo.
I should have put status quo, you're right. It is status that's, quo is the villain in that movie.
That's another movie that I can sing with full confidence that I will know all the lyrics until I die. Specifically the first one and the second one.
And the third one. I love the third one. I saw the third one in theaters three times. It is currently available on Netflix to watch the third one.
I'm gonna watch it then. I think I have the DVDs right now. I'll probably just pull one out and just relive
so good.
My high school experience.
And you could also sort of put Sharpay in a little bit of a villain category. Mm-hmm. She really does work against the class a lot of the times. Until
she is an antagonist.
She remembers that she's a friend at the very end, usually. So she tends to play that role. Yeah, you're right. Not full villain, but we can put her on the list as far as like people who are constantly getting in the way of our heroes.
Yeah.
And then I think the last one I have on my list that you guys didn't talk about is Swiss Family Robinson, which is one of my family's favorite movies. Now, the villain here is just pirates in general. Very, very bad, no redeeming qualities, mean, evil pirates that come to the island and are trying to kill everybody. So they're just – I like when like a Maleficent where you sort of feel bad for her or you really sort of understand because she's my favorite cartoon Disney villain. And I like how one dimensionally evil she is in the cartoon. That's what I love about her. That's why she's up there with Scar and Jafar because they don't have redeeming qualities. They're horrible.
Yeah, they're just horrible.
So sometimes I don't necessarily love when you go back and tell a story about a villain to say like, remember how they were good until everyone made them bad. You know, like I like them just to be bad sometimes. And in Pirates or in Swiss Family Robinson, the pirates are just out for murder. Like that's their whole purpose. And it's really the family that you're caring about and worrying about. So I love that live action movie. It's one of the back in the day old guard. But we owned it on VHS and we used to watch it all the time as a family. So that one, that's the other one I have on my list. So we talked about Cruella, right?
Briefly, very briefly.
Glenn Close as Cruella de Vil is so good. Undeniably amazing. She's got a little bit of Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman kookiness where you're like, she's just going to murder people. But
she's
going to
skin puppies.
Yeah. Yes. But she's also got a Cate Blanchett regality to her where she can really play like, she's wearing like this fur coat that in fancy clothes she belongs in that world. But then like as soon as her hair comes undone and she's cuckoo bananas, like you don't, she is straight off of the page, like out of the Disney animated feature. Like now when I watch the Disney animated, I see her face in the cartoon because they just cast her so perfectly. What were you going to say, Andrea? Sorry.
No. I was going to say that it's interesting that you mentioned just how she carries herself because one of my high school friends had the pleasure of working with her in New York. And he said that she was so sweet, but you can see that if she wanted to, she could switch and be Cruella. Like, it was just amazing.
I love that.
So good. She's so good.
Nice. So that's our lists. Those are all of our, I'm sure we missed so many because we can't cover everything and we're just going off of three people's narrow view of the world and of villains. And the list for Disney and our Disney live action features is very, very extensive. And I think that given our ages, there are a lot of those movies that are in the Swiss Family time period and beyond, like way back in the day that we just didn't interact with maybe as much as maybe some of you listeners. So if there are any out there that we missed, we like definitely let us know. And I think I don't know, you guys let me know about this, but I think our confession of the week is how many movies Andrea that should have seen in her lifetime but haven't.
I haven't seen a lot. Like that I was looking through the list, like Freaky Friday, The Losing Choir, what else? Princess Diary, I actually just saw it like a couple months ago for the first time.
Did you see one and two?
Just the first one, not the
second one.
Okay,
they're both on Netflix, just FYI.
I think she should also tell the audience what she told me today.
Yes.
So I was talking to Andrea.
I thought you were going to bring it up then.
I thought she was going to bring it up in confession. So
go ahead.
I was talking with Andrea about the multiple Peter Pans last episode, as some of you listeners might remember. And so today I was talking about it with her again because I realized Hook wasn't a Disney movie. And Andrea told me, no, it is, because it's Peter Pan. And that is when Andrea found out that Peter Pan is not a Disney property. I sent her stuff from Finding Neverland, both the musical. I didn't talk about the movie, but I told her about the musical. I told her about how
the movie is really good, though, too.
It is. I just love the musical so much. I told her
we need to share these screenshots. Like, they are phenomenal.
They're very funny. She was devastated.
I don't think it's Disney, though. I'm not sure. It's Peter Pan. It is Disney. Disney did not invent Peter Pan. Oh my God, what the I'm shook.
Angela, I have to bleep that now.
That's okay. She gets to be bleeped. That's all right.
It's okay.
But yeah, so today, Andrea found out that Peter Pan is based off a book, Peter Pan, written by J.M. Barrie, which was actually a play written by J.M. Barrie.
Yes.
And I'm going to send her actual songs from Finding Neverland as soon as we leave.
Also, the original production of Peter Pan with Mary Martin, one of my favorite songs from that one is it's called Tender Shepherd. It's my lullaby I sing to my nephews and nieces. And it's the one that Mrs. Darling sings to the kids as she leaves them in their bedroom with Nana. And she leaves, and it's such a it reminds me a little of Edelweiss, the beauty of Edelweiss. Mm-hmm. And it's got sort of that lilting English sound to it. It's one of my favorite songs, and that one's got great music in it too. So you should send her all of the music ever done for a Peter Pan production ever, non-Disney. Yeah,
now that she knows the truth,
honestly, I don't know how many times I said shooketh during our conversation, and
tell her literally Peter Pan and the sequel, the direct-to-video sequel, were the only Disney Peter Pan things that exist. The rest are not Disney.
I think that it's a 100%, as we were talking about Tinkerbell being so visibly Disney, now it's 100% reasonable that you would think that they were.
Right, exactly.
Because Disney really has taken Tink and made her almost not quite to the par of Mickey and Minnie, but she's definitely easily as visible to the audiences. She comes out of the castle in the fireworks. She used to do the intro with her pixie dust. She and Mickey are the two that you can meet coming into Magic Kingdom at the entrance. They are in the room together, separate rooms, but they are in the hall together. So it's funny that they put Tink in there with Mickey. Those are the two,
exactly.
I think maybe even more than Minnie, like visibly Disney characters is Tink. And so I think it's 100% reasonable, Andrea, that you might have thought that it was. And because so many studios have made it, it's been in the forefront for you for a long time. You just had no, how would you know? Like, you know,
childhood,
I don't know.
Childhood ruined, living a lie. Shannon had to ruin everything
she
for me.
She was just that. I did not. You were going to find out eventually.
Do y'all also know
you
about Santa?
Figured out, you would have watched Finding Neverland one day and been like, wait a second.
Andrea, do you also know about Santa? Should we tell her? Should we tell her?
Wait, the one. Santa Claus is a Disney movie.
No, I'm saying that Santa isn't real.
What did you just say?
I know.
This is a family-friendly show. You need to be censored. You cannot be saying those lies.
She just dropped the F-bomb, and she wants me to censor you for talking about Santa Claus.
What's next? The Tooth Fairy isn't real?
No,
it's the Rock.
She is real.
We already discussed this.
That's true. She's the Rock.
He's the Rock.
The Easter Bunny doesn't exist.
No, of course the Easter Bunny exists. Don't be crazy.
Fuck.
It's Hugh Jackman.
I keep on cursing.
And on that
I'm so
note,
shook.
I think on that note, Shannon, take it away.
So send us your feedback. We answered some questions from David, and we've answered some fan mail from Chicka Fan. Obviously, we want to hear what you have to say. If you have some confessions, like the fact that you didn't know that Peter Pan is a book. You can send those into us. We'll talk about them. You can email us at fangirlconfessional@randomchatter.com or fgc@randomchatter.com if you don't want to type that out. You can also email the network at randomchatter@randomchatter.com. Whenever you like, reach out to us. Tell us what you think was a Disney movie or wasn't a Disney movie. Love to hear it.
Maybe she thought Walt wrote the book. That's it.
I mean, I'm not. It's okay. It's
Walt's
okay.
First and only book. There you go.
I feel so judged right now.
You are never judged by us. Never.
Safe space.
That's safe space.
Safe space. But okay, you can also find us online. Let Andrea know that she's not alone in thinking that Peter Pan is not a Disney. It was a Disney property. There. Or what is your thing? What is the thing that you thought for the long time that now you've just realized is? I always thought it was Kitten Caboodle, which I thought was weird. Like, why does a kitten have a caboodle? It's not. It's a kit and caboodle. And I've been saying kit and caboodle for all this time. So, see, we all have one. Did anyone else think it was kit and caboodle?
I don't know.
No. Maybe once when I was young and innocent.
Crickets. Anyways, find us online and let us know what your kitten caboodle Peter Pan confession is at Random Chatter on Twitter and also on Instagram. Individually, you can find us. I'm at Nerd in the City for now. That's going to change, but right now you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Nerd in the City. Shannon, where are you at, girl?
You can find me pretty much anywhere at Shank Beezy.
And Andrea?
You can find me on Twitter at Cats Bears. That's KatzBearz. And you can also find me on Instagram. I never do this, but you know what? I've been posting some nice stuff and getting on the road to awesomeness. Whoa. So Andrea.CRDM.
That made me so happy. Welcome to. I love hearing people being like pushing their Instagram. It's my favorite medium. As Andrea knows. And don't forget to visit randomchatter.com for all of our other podcasts. We are all on other podcasts on the network, and we'd love for you to check those out and find a new favorite podcast along with Fangirl Confessional, which we know you love. Andrea and Shannon are on which one are you on?
The Tight Beam.
Tight Beam! I forget the name of it.
What? An Expanse podcast.
An Expanse podcast. Yes. I am on Guardians of the MCU with Tim and John, as well as our flagship podcast, Random Chatter. Are you guys on any others besides Tight Beam?
She is.
Oh, yes. And it is on
Fangirl Confessional, The Outer
Rim.
Why
are you naming all the other? There we go. The Outer Rim.
I already know you're on Fangirl Confessional.
It's funny because I was trying to think of my own shows. That's why I was saying them so slow. I was like, wait a second. What am I in again?
What are you talking about?
I'm on the show you guys are listening to right now. Did you know that? Here I am.
Moral of this story is, aside from Fangirl Confessional, the show you're currently listening to, we are all on a bunch of other ones and would love for you to find us on those podcasts at randomchatter.com. We are diverging.
So everybody needs a little help sometimes, like Andrea needed to find out about Peter Pan. And we also need some help sometimes running the network, running our website, recording our shows, hosting our content. And to help with keeping those lights on, we do have a Patreon account where you can donate as low as $1, one whole dollar, to the Random Chatter Network every month. One of the perks, it's actually the most used perk, is complete access to our Discord community. Our Discord community is very strong, very active. We have many, many, many channels. Only a few of them are open to the public, our main lobby and each of our show channels, our show-specific channels. However, if you want access to things, topics like Star Wars or gaming or collectibles or even just to chat and make some new friends, the best way to get to do that is to become a monthly donor to Patreon. Like I said, the lowest is a dollar. You don't have to take anything if you don't want to. You would hop on over to patreon.com/randomchatter. You can also find the link on Random Chatter But if Patreon isn't your bag, if you can't give right now, that's okay. We are still kind of a new show. And in that, word of mouth and ratings and reviews are just as important to us as financial support. So if you can't do Patreon, if it's not in your interest right now, you can still support the shows of the Random Chatter Network by rating and reviewing them on things like iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, things like that. I don't know where we are. I just kind of listed some places. You can tell your friends about us. Tell people who like the things you like about us, because I'm sure they'd like to listen to podcasts about the same things you like. And that goes, like I said, for any show. Just any kind of support is support. No support is more important than the other, because they do very different things. And so getting our voices to more ears is incredibly important. So any kind of support you can give us, we'd super, super appreciate. It is all welcome and appreciated.
And that about wraps it up on our live-action villains and Disney and our groundbreaking confessions. This is Fangirl Confessional signing off.